Blog Talk Radio.
There's something outside.
What is that?
Welcome to Monster X Radio. This is Gunnar Monson. Today, I'm going to be talking with Mr. Ben Fried. Ben is one of the members of Bigfoot Ops, Bigfoot Research Team up in Washington State. He's been on the show before, but it's been a while, so we're going to catch up and see what Ben's been up to. Ben, welcome to Monster X Radio. How are you?
Good, Chuck. Gunner, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Called you worse.
Yeah, that's right. I've been called worse. So,
yeah,
so for the folks that haven't...
I try to, but...
For the folks that haven't had an opportunity to hear about you before, can you give us a little bit of a background, what you're doing up there with Bigfoot Ops?
Yeah, what we're doing is we're actually trying to study behaviors and just regular patterns. We're not actually trying to prove any kind of existence or anything. We're kind of beyond that. So we've been doing that since June of 2010.
And you have a particular research area that you guys frequent up in Washington State.
Yeah, we go right outside of Ashford. It's Ashford, Washington, up by Mount Rainier Park entrance. We really hadn't had to go anywhere else. That's where we've had most of our encounters at and everything. It's almost every month, so we have something going on. So,
and you, like you said, you've been doing this for a while, and you alluded to encounters. What are some of the things that you've experienced in your area?
We had a sighting like 2 years ago at one of our sites, just Charlie. We go Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta. It's all your military terms there on the alphabet. So it's a lot easier to keep track of than saying the Yellow Gang or whatever. But I was up there with Scott Taylor, and I had a sighting. It was about almost 9 o'clock at night, a little bit after, almost dark. It was kind of unique, and Scott Taylor's with BFRO, so he was happened to be up there with me. Good.
No, I know Scott. Yeah, been out with Scott before. So,
well, not a lot of people do, so I just want to make sure everybody's aware of that. So, but that was actually quite interesting. We've had a few other things go on. Well, actually, that's one of our top sites because I just had something go on here a couple weeks ago, I guess. We tried to do some follow-up on there. Let me think here. We've had rocks thrown at us. We've heard knocks. We've had had a couple people up there had sightings also, but they were at night. I shouldn't say it. It's actually one person. He was actually my boss. I had took up there, and he was sleeping in the car out back behind my RV. And he said something woke him up in the middle of the night, and he happened to look through his windshield, and he sees this. He called it a creature staring at him. I had actually just found that out actually a couple of weeks ago because he was so terrified. When I found him in the morning, it was about 6 o'clock, I guess, maybe earlier. I got up and he was just shivering and white faced and got out of his car and You just said, you know, I was going to talk to him in the research and everything, but he said the research is not for him. He was just totally terrified and everything. He said, I'm going home. So that's what he did. And that's been contacted until, I guess it was like 4 or 5 years ago. But I actually went back last week and happened to run into him and talk to him about it. I said, what happened or whatever? And that's what he told me. I thought that was really interesting. So had he had any violent encounters or anything?
But had he had any interest? He must have had some interest in Bigfoot if he was, or did you just trick him and tell him we're going camping and you took him to a Bigfoot area?
Just love doing that stuff too. He showed a little bit of interest in it, and he liked to get into UFOs, which I'm not really into. But he showed some kind of interest up there. But I guess when he got, it's easy to talk in a lighted room or whatever. Or after I got him up there, he found, these things are for real. So he felt a little different there. But he actually talked to me. So he talked about wanting to go out again, but again, that's in a lighted room or whatever, But it took him several years to get over it. So,
well, that's people that have encounters, especially visual encounters. There's some people, become obsessed with the subject and can't get enough of it, and other people like don't want anything to do with it. It keeps them even. Stories of seasoned outdoorsmen, not wanting to go back in the woods for some, never go back. But, it sounds like that this gentleman has recovered from the initial shock. You think, people having
4 years.
It's a big paradigm shift when you get that confirmation experience, where you see this creature that basically stepped out of legend, and maybe you saw it on, stories about it on TV and stuff, but it's complete. Mm-hmm. I can imagine it completely different waking up and looking out your windshield and seeing something looking at you. Reminds me of that 911 mm-hmm. call. What's it doing? It's looking at me, But
I tried to get some details on what it looked like and everything. He didn't give me too much. He said it was dark and just knew it was just peeped over. And he said it stood there for like a couple of minutes, I guess, and then it just walked off. But he just was sitting there watching. He just woke up to it, He didn't sleep well at all anyway. So I thought that was kind of strange.
Can you describe what your sighting? What did you see? What were the circumstances and how good a good look did you see and describe what you saw?
Okay. That particular, I've been out there a few times and I've actually seen, hair and stuff. I see a creature running here and there or whatever, just glimpses a lot of times. But I actually had a really good look at one when I was up with Scott, like I said. And we had been hiking all over the site. We went to Charlie's up on the hill and stuff for several hours, and we went down to Delta. And we were coming back from Delta, and it was pretty dark, or getting close to dark. I can't say dark. But anyway, so I was sitting there talking to him, and I said, well, I better set my equipment before it gets dark. So I had two farms, which are field audio recording monitors, we call them, but they're actually just recorders on tripods with parabolics. Anyway, and I had two of those in my hand, and I was going out, and I was, it had just drizzled a little bit, I think it was. But anyway, I was going across some deadfall trees, limbs and stuff like that, and I was slipping all over the place, and as I looked to my left, I kind of just got a glimpse of something moving, and I just kind of like stopped over and stared over there, and here was this, big, I'm trying to say big, it was huge. Thing was actually bigger than the tree. It was trying to hide behind a small tree. But I guess the tree's probably about 10, 12 inches wide. And there's this big old thing trying to hide behind it. So anyway, I could see his foot move back, and then he stepped on a stick or something and made a big snap. He kind of looked back over at me, and he was peeking behind the tree. And then he looked down at his, back where he stepped, And then he had the weirdest look on his face. I mean, it had a, I don't know, like, oh, well, I got caught, or yeah, I'm trying to be nice about the words I usually use. But, like, just looked down and said, oh, crap. And then he kind of looked back up at me, and like I said, he had a weird look on his face. And then he pushed off the tree and went down on all four, but he flew about, like, when he pushed off the tree, a good 15 feet. I've never seen anything like that. Just lightning fast. He covered there's a tree line like 100 feet. There's some tree there. Where he was standing was just a couple, a few trees, and then some brush, whatever. And then he covered that in a matter of a couple seconds. It seemed like 2 or 3 seconds. He was just gone. And he went back in the brush back there. He's snapping branches and stuff. So I turned around yelling out for Scott to come out of his tent. He stays in the tent and everything. He came out there and he had a thermal. My thermal was in the RV. I hadn't got it yet. But I was telling him what had just happened. He was up on top of a stump and we could actually hear it still back there. It didn't go very far. But I couldn't get him. He wasn't brave enough to go in there with me. So I didn't want to go in there by myself chasing natural, because we've had some bad instances where we try to do things like that and it kind of backfires on us. Boulders or wood thrown at you or rock thrown at you. So you definitely don't want to go in there just chasing them and everything. So they stuck around there for like 3 hours or whatever in the brush back there at the tree line, and actually got some recording and some vocals coming out of there that particular night too. So, but people always ask me what it looked like. Well, it's weird. I always wanted to say, and I'm not trying to be racist or anything, but it, like a Eskimo's face. But it had a real distinguished brow ridge, really protruded like a caveman. That's what I always wanted to say. But the eyes were kind of like insane. I couldn't really see the eyes because it was getting dark, and it just had real black in the eyes. It was really hard to see them, and it was off a cinnamon color. But anyway, he had stuck his head up, but he's looking around the tree and everything. I have to notice his head was up next to his knot up there, so I went back and measured that. It was 8'2". So that's how big he was. The feet and everything, there was a lot of underbrush, yes. So I measured that, so make sure I got that and everything. But other than that, it was just really, really quick. It was less than, probably 30 seconds maybe. All together before it. I was just meant to look down, see foot move, whatever, look at me, and then took off.
But you actually saw it. Yeah, and you actually saw it in its locomotion. I mean, that it dropped down. I mean, it saw you tried to hide behind a tree that was too small to hide behind, and realizing that it had been seen, it boogied out of there, but you actually got to observe it drop down and go to all fours and then leave the
area. Yeah, it wasn't like
area.
A drop. It was like a leap. I've never seen anything the way it pushed up a tree like that. It pushed off the tree, and it just went flying, It's got such agility, and it can just, stretch out for everything. And they seem to do that a lot. They seem to run. They're always running away. We hear them running away if they're close to us in the dark or whatever. And if we think that we see them or whatever, they're always taking off.
So,
I had that happen just a couple weeks ago too.
Well, let's talk about that. Right. What happened in that instance? I mean, you have an area that, and people, you get skeptical when. Bigfoot researchers talk about having multiple contacts with, but my experience up in our research area in the Tillamook Forest, I mean, we had a lot of weird things, and it was in one particular area. They seem to be curious and come in and look at us. Is what I suspect is here's these weird, that we're like Bigfoot TV. So,
yep.
So you guys have been doing this for a while. You of the times that you go up into your research area, what would you say percentage-wise the frequency of some kind of unexplained, what you might relate to possibly Bigfoot activity do you have? Like,
Well, they all seem to be there all the time. It's just, you just have to move around. The site's almost like about 7 square miles, I would say. And we have several different sites in there. And they actually move around these different sites. One's up at a higher elevation, one's in the lower land, one's next to the rivers, and then next to the creeks, some have creeks running through them. It just depends. And they don't sit there. We pretty much pinpoint exactly, like in July for Charlie is a really good month. But for some reason, we've seen like we've had something going on there every month in July, every year. But they hang around there. You'll have a lot of activity, and then you go up there the next weekend or a couple of days and get nothing. So you have to go, like it's a Yankee site. We go there. That's where a couple of weeks ago I just had something going on. And we believe they get pushed out of there is because they're doing some logging up at Zebra. And they move. It actually, this Yankee site, we call it now, they moved in that area because the logging going on. So there seems to be nothing going on at Zebra right now. So we think the logging has actually pushed them out of there. So they kind of like...
Which makes sense.
This area and then, yeah. They do a lot of stuff that's repetitive and unique, you know, but... Overall, we have to do a lot of go looking for them. Sometimes they come to, you know, Charlie's site's good for curiosity or whatever, but most of the time we're dealing with juveniles, and these juveniles are getting bigger now. So the adults don't seem to want to do anything to do with juveniles. They go out of their way to, you know, to get around this. It seems like when juveniles are involved or anything with the adults there, they seem to just be like training them on us, you know, or whatever, see how our reactions are when they come in. But they're very, very watchful. We know there's an adult always there, so we're always kind of careful. But it's a unique experience. Like I said, it's comical sometimes. And sometimes you go out there and it's just like nothing going on. I mean, most of the time, like, you know, we still do it every once in a while. They go check the full moon status because we've never heard or recorded anything in the full moon on the day of the full moon, I should say, or the new moon, whatever they call it. We haven't got any kind of activity going on that day. Don't understand it. Can never figure it out. But that day is like nothing. I shouldn't say the day is more than the night. We've had activity during the day, but we haven't had any activity at night. So it seems like when that moon pops up there in its brightest or whatever, there's nothing going on. No calls, no nothing. In 9 years, I've never heard nothing out there. So, but
on the full moon night.
The moon. Yeah. And sometimes it goes on, you know, a day or two before that, a day or two after, we'll get nothing. So, but we go out and check just to make sure the research is, you know, accordingly. Because when people talk, you know, I have to, and it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Because this group of big, you know, I was saying there's one ticker group here. We think there's another group up at Zebra because we've recorded two things going on at the same time, two different sets of groups, you know, going on. And this particular group up at Charlie and everything is about 10 of them in that group now. So things change, like I said, and sometimes we get, like, individual activity where we just know there's maybe one or two. We should never say one because it seems to be more than one all the time. But it's the numbers are down. We haven't heard the main group, which is 10 or 11 in that group, if I remember correctly. I think I counted 11 one night and just their vocals back and forth. But we haven't heard the group in years. But we've had a lot of, you know, individual or twos and threes going on all the time, but never hear the whole group out there in a long time. So
how did you determine the number of the of individuals that you were hearing finding
evidence
of?
One night they were all vocalizing out there, and actually this is what started how I found the site in the first start, because it was actually out there in the day and I had to pull up my truck and I was out there researching this particular area. And I had been getting close a long time because they were doing few snaps or whatever. Anyway, I had stopped and pulled over my truck up in this spot. I got out of the truck, and the first thing I heard, and this was at about 7 o'clock in the morning, heard three knocks. And I thought, okay. So I thought, since I was just opening up the door, I assumed it may have been gunfire or whatever. Somebody shoot out there, and I think that was a little shooting me. Anyway, so in about 30 seconds later, then some elk come flying out. There's three elk. There's a bull and a couple of cows come flying out of the brush. And they're about 20, 25 feet in front of me. And they were running across from left to right. And they got down their waist. They probably went about another 25 feet or whatever. And I heard a bang, bang, bang again, which was definitely a wood knock. And they changed direction to my right across this road I was at. And then it must have been 5 seconds later, I hear bang, 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 and they changed direction again. Now, I don't know if they were actually hurting them or whatever. I like to think that, but, you know, the elk were responding to the knocks, and they were just moving, mm-hmm. you know. So they ended up going towards the west, and they ran off. So I actually come back to that site at night. I went around and looked around for a while. Didn't find any tracks or anything like that, but I went back at about 11 o'clock at night, and I was out there, and I hadn't been there more than 5 minutes with my wife. We were sitting out there, and I actually heard a vocal from a juvenile. And I was kind of like, you know, corresponding. I was doing some loops back and forth. This lasted for about 5 minutes, and all of a sudden, I guess Mama was up on top of the hill, because these were definitely juvenile, and they were actually joined in by another juvenile. They were singing back and forth. They were back. It sounds like singing anyway to me. And I guess Mama realized that I wasn't a Bigfoot, that I was a human or whatever. She come off this hill. Well, this the same hill she come off of is one really steep hill. It's right next to Charlie's site. And she come running down there doing this bloody woman scream. She's just screaming and screaming and screaming. And little one's kind of, you know, broke it off, stopped. And I was standing there, and about, must have been like 5 minutes later, seemed like my truck is surrounded, and it's stuck. I didn't have a light or anything like that out there. I kind of like, I hear grunting, you know, I hear stuff go flying over my head. I hear brush being tore up, you know, and it's kind of flung inside of my truck and everything, but I can't see things. It's like, you know, pitch black up there, can't see your hand in front of your face or anything. So I thought I bit off more, maybe more than I could chew here, because, you know, they're grunting, growling, and I hear more and more coming in. I hear, you know, circling out there in the brush, you know, pacing back and forth and just trying to, you know, get me going. So anyway, I kind of just kept it quiet for a while and calmed down. And I thought, you know, I was going to get myself and done for, but they're kind of at the spot where there's nothing I could do now. You know, I couldn't even get my truck in time, because they weren't that far away. So anyway, so they calmed down a little bit, and this is a couple more loops and everything, and the little ones start, you know, vocalizing again, and then I hear the female chattering, and she was screaming for a while, and I actually had to tell my wife, calm her down, because she actually thought it was a woman being killed out there, and actually had to take her after the group there for like, she actually thought it was a woman. It did sound like a woman screaming in the last parts of the vocal. You can actually hear, you know, it sounds like a woman, is this a human woman's voice, or not voice, but, you know, I should say voice or whatever, scream. But I actually had to take her at the end of the night, sure that there's nobody else out there. You know, she actually thought it was a woman being torqued. And I said, why would there be a woman out here? You know, we're vocalizing with Bigfoot or whatever, you know, Bigfoot. So, but anyway, I had to sit there and, this had gone for, it was probably like 2 or 3 hours, maybe longer, 4, I would probably say. And I could actually sit there and start hearing, you know, and call back and forth, and I started counting. Even though they were moving around a lot, at that one particular one, that's why I say 10 or 11, because I didn't know for sure if it was a male, if he was grunting, if it was even moving around or whatever. So I definitely did count 10 of them that night, so. And for a real close encounter, that's probably the ones, you know, I always say like they're testing or whatever, but we've had a few encounters, like me and Chuck out there, something similar, you know, where they do stuff like that. So we get kind of used to it now. So.
It's commonplace. Yeah. It's kind of funny when you do get in an area that has a lot of activity and they seem to be interested in what you're doing or what, or interacting or let, I mean, they let you know they're in the area, but they don't seem to want us to see them. But they don't.
Yeah, I don't understand. Yeah.
I mean, they're not shy about vocalizing. Yeah.
No. Well, they don't vocalize as much now that we're out, when we go out there a lot. They seem to know. I realize it used to be when I was out there. I was out there for like a month and a half after that, every weekend, and it was just like I thought, well, how the hell is everybody having a hard time recording these things? Because they're just Chatty Cathy's all night long. You know, they're vocalizing back and forth all night long, and the more you interact with them, the more it seems like, you know, and there's other people at the site and everything that started going out there. And I think that's what's calmed it all down, because when they're close to camp, they don't vocalize anymore. They have to be way out there. You know, if they're within, you know, 500 feet or whatever, they're not going to vocalize anymore. But that I didn't understand. It was like a month and a half. And actually, Chuck had picked up one of those recordings the last night that I heard some real vocalizations like that. And that's where I met him at, is where he recorded that, and he asked me if I had, you know, since he had seen me after that night. I was on Facebook or whatever, and that's how we hooked up. So he got the last part of it. Now, every once in a while, you get some screaming, or the males call them. They call them a lot. You know, girls go, woohoo, back, whatever, and they do that long, drawn-out Ohio call. And that's the only call I seem to hear them do. Now, they grunt and everything like that, but that seems to be the major call I hear all the time. So...
Interesting. Yeah, so what kind of? No, what kind of documentation? You said that you're not so much interested in proving they exist, because in your mind, you've had that confirmation experience. You've seen one, so you know they exist. Now
right.
It's about data collection.
It's difficult. Yeah. It's difficult to because people want to sit there and prove, you know, that's the main thing is people are trying to prove everything. I've read, you know, document their behaviors or whatever like that and things they do. It can be harmful to humans. Like I said, we haven't really had it. I mean, I've had my windshield busted with rock in my RV, another one. The habits they do is, I thought it was more fascinating than trying to prove that, you know, something exists. It's getting down to where people want to kill one or whatever, and I don't have any harm if they want to kill anything. So it doesn't make sense to do that. So it's not going to prove anything to science. This is you kill one if it's happened to be male, then somebody's going to want to kill and dissect a female, and then they say, well, that's the only one. Then they'll have to kill the whole entire family. It never stops. So. And I don't think they need protecting like people think, because they pretty much hide all the time, and you don't need to pay. I don't even know how you would keep one on a reservation, basically, you know, let's put a preserve over for them. Good luck on that one. These creatures are just too huge. They're too strong. And we like to document their strength. I mean, we've seen them pick up, you know, you can't say I've seen them, but we've heard them push over good-sized trees. I mean, it's just ridiculous on the strength. We've actually... have some photographs of limbs in a cedar tree, which are probably about 3.5 inches, 4 inches wide, pulled them out of the trees. They look like little spears sitting there. Actually, pull them out the long way. They don't break them off. They pull them out. And that's incredible strength. And they show lots of intelligence, like feeding them apples, the bags of apples. I thought it was feeding them. They were taking the bags of apples and actually go out and baiting deer with them. I found the bags about 3 miles away. They would always date them and everything. When they take them, like I said, I thought I was feeding them up a storm and everything. And they were actually using those apples to draw in deer. And they were putting them in an ambush area. I thought that was really unique. I thought, what kind of intelligence is that? You know. So.
That's pretty amazing.
You know, to document like their food sources. Yeah. It doesn't do any good that, you know, like when you do an habituation, to be trying to feed them. I feed them to keep them around sometimes. You know, we'll give them biscuits and stuff like that. But primarily, we know that's not their primary food source or whatever, and that's what we're trying to figure out. But their food sources are, we know one of them is salal, I think Tom on your guys even said the same things. You know, they relate that with the little berries, like Salal berries and everything. But I thought it was unique that Salal is an appetite suppressant. And she needs a lot of that in the wintertime. So, with the higher elevation, we found a little pile to these things. So, out in the middle of nowhere. So, this is, you know, that would make sense. Because the food's more scarce. There's not as, you know, small animals. There's not as much as there is in the summertime. Making that from down the lowlands in the summertime. So, it's unique. You find all kinds of little stuff like that. So, and there's, unless you really see them, it's really hard to prove anything unless you actually see them do it. And that's what we're hoping to. From all this, is if we do certain things, we can say, okay, that's a pursued thing, you know, it's 100%. So, it's difficult.
So, you have these different quadrants, these different areas that you've designated, and mm-hmm. you say that you, yeah. and they move, they seem to move around within this area. Mm-hmm. Are you able to somewhat predict where they might be at a given time, different time of the year or
yes.
different
yes.
time of
well,
day?
They,
or...
they change. They change. Well, this year is actually surprisingly because we're getting more days activity going on than we normally do. I thought this year is really different because most of the time we're always, you know, did a lot of night study and everything. And then I said, a couple weeks I ran into one 11 o'clock in the morning, which I thought, wow, I haven't heard one out here vocalizing scared of hell me at 11 o'clock in the morning in a long time. So we actually had recordings two weeks ago at Charlie's site. We were out there and they were throwing rocks and everything. And this was going on in broad daylight about almost 6 o'clock in the morning. Actually, it was 5:41 a.m. And it was broad daylight. We thought that was different, you know, to have that kind of sighting. It was there most of the night, but it didn't do anything. We had some apples laying up there, and then we went back to eat some apples. And I shouldn't say it either because I haven't completely proved that yet. That's what was going on. I actually had a camera that failed on me, but we actually recorded all this. We could hear knocks, and there were a couple of trees pushed over. Hear some big thumping. I actually checked the spot around the apples. Yeah, I couldn't find it. First thing, when I see apples missing, I started thinking it's deer, elk, or bears. Well, I didn't find any tracks like that. I didn't find any tracks, period, which was unique because the ground was pretty soft over there, and I thought that was unique that it was if it would have been deer or elk, they had that real short hoofs, and they actually do a lot of good impressions in there. You can always tell. But I couldn't find anything like that. So, and I actually double checked 2 or 3 times now, too. I was actually out there today and I just double check everything, see if I can find a bear track, if I can light it off as a bear. But you can never really tell unless you actually see it. So,
but you were,
anyway.
And you had said something to me a while ago about you were asking me if I had, you know, ever had issues
that,
with batteries going out. So,
yeah.
What you've had some, I mean, because you've had a few things that are weird experiences, and that would be one of those that, and it is something that is reported
I've never had
on occasion.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I've heard that from a couple of people, and it's just I've never experienced it. We've had battery failures before. It's only because we, you know, not, I'm guessing I didn't put new batteries in there. Because I actually put new batteries in there for time, but I actually had lithiums in this thing. And when I fired up the camera and I triple checked it because I actually was prepared for this because I was trying to recreate this incident I had a couple times out there with them throwing rocks at the equipment and everything and coming up and grabbing it. So I actually put some game cams on all my farms now. So I was hoping to get some picture. Well, I triple checked this damn camera simply that had a battery level of 79%. I actually said it on the recording, but it didn't fire. It was completely dead. The batteries were completely dead when I went out there. But again, I put it off not putting fresh batteries in there. I should have, but when people say that, but I had a parabolic, it was completely recording the whole time. It had fresh batteries in it, and they were untouched. So if people want to say that, you know, I just thought it shouldn't have happened. It still bugs me that this camera didn't fire. after I triple checked it, you know, and I checked the camera afterwards, and, you know, and I checked it before, so it was actually checked four times to make sure it was firing. It was testing like it was going to fire a video every time. Well, when I went out there, it was completely dead. But the parabolic recorded and everything, and the batteries were all up, so I don't know what to say about that. So I just let it out.
So in,
being lazy.
So what happened was you had placed some apples, and when you went back, and some apples were gone. The camera
happened before in the same spot. So, but not the battery incident. But just let you know, this spot we've had a. They did the same thing, just like the third or fourth time, where they sit back and throw rocks down at the equipment. We put it out there, and we're about, like, oh, probably 80, 90 feet away from this, where we sit at, and we put this on the west end of camp, and we sit at the east side of camp. As long as we do that, because if we sit at the west end of camp, then we have that kid be on the east side of the camp. So, you know, they're always trying to say, well, we can't see him, so... But we've had this happen many times, and I was actually prepared for this because I was actually going to want to get this picture. It happened exactly like it's supposed to, but like the camera did fire. So,
which is just weird. I mean, it's either some weird anomaly coincidence, or there's something. I mean, because it has happened before. I've heard stories. You were asking me if it ever happened. I've not had it. I've had that happen. We didn't have never gotten to utilize a lot of video, and the trail cams that we have put out have never caught anything suspicious. But I also think people, get in this thing. Well, it's just they can sense trail, and I don't think it has to be anything that's super sensitive. I just think, we touch them, they smell like us,
Yeah, well, that doesn't seem to bother them, trust me, because I've had a lot of them where I see, we have our cameras up there in the trees, and they're moving them and everything. And actually, I had a blurry photo, I think I should do that, with five of them in the photo where they're moving it, but you can actually see it's being moved, and you can see trees in it, and then you see clearing, and then another tree, and then you get a picture of them, and back to trees again. So it was actually moving and everything, but... These particular cameras have never failed me in the last couple of years without catching something. Usually I had old cameras that would light out or something, too close or whatever. These things are actually, I use the Browning trail cam, and actually they're really good cameras. So they're quick, mature speeds and everything, so they can be kept fixed. But just the battery failure, I've never had any battery failures on them before, so... Like I said, I'm just going to write it off as that. I've never experienced any paranormal out there. What people say about the cloaking and everything.
Well,
with my eyes, but mind speaking, I've never had any of that stuff ever going in the last 9 years. Neither has anybody I know out there that's come with this or everything that's experienced that at all. So I don't know what to say about that. So.
Yeah, so I want to back up the bus just for a minute, because you said in this occasion where something was moving the camera that you actually got some individuals on the camera? I mean, obviously not.
Yeah, that's how we did squash pictures. You have to have squash taken. That's what I always say. It was moving the camera and actually moved to an area and they caught them on the camera. And there's actually, you can see, it's got color in it. It's got a cinnamon colored one. They're hunched over a little bit. The female, she's standing above the thing. She's 7'9". And only because there's a log spoken off her old tree there. And her head comes at the top of that. So she's actually standing in a hole. You can't see that. And there's a log behind it. There's a male in there, a big male. He's hunched over. They're on all fours. He's on all fours. The other one looks like he's getting down on all fours, and the female's standing, and she actually has a little one on her back. And you actually see the legs, dangling there. Now, it's still blurry. That's why I call it inconclusive. I don't show it a lot of times because it's because it's blurry. It's not crystal clear. I can't say too much, but I've had everybody look at that and say the same thing. I sent it to everybody and they say, yeah, there's five in this picture. It's gray, cinnamon, blonde, and a darker brown one. And I think there's another one they see off the right. I don't see that one, but like I said, it's, there's estrogen is definitely clear. But that isn't me for me to slide in there, but, you know, whatever. But I just go by what I see. But you can actually see
some muscle
tones in the back on the server back.
Yeah, and did you go back to the location? Obviously, you are familiar with the area, and you looked for, like, to see if these figures or the shapes that you're seeing in this picture weren't there at some other time, right? You got this, like, before and after kind of.
There's nothing there like that. Yeah, there's nothing there.
Right.
It's just it's going up the side of a hill. In this particular area, I was trying to set the cameras on. I was trying to get something coming over a hill, actually. And this is a little clear area here, and this is some old down stuff, not very much of it. It was just a perfect clear spot, and you would have to come through here. So it looks like they were heading up the – it's like a little ravine that goes up the mountain. And I suspect it because we've had little – found structures there, like little structures, whatever size. There's camera. We actually threw my eye through out there three or four cameras. We actually had 18 videos going off, fired. Had little teepees just out of the range of the IR, you know, built. You know, and they were like 3 feet tall or whatever. But something was kept on setting off my camera, so they were throwing. You know, there ended up being a big brush pile off in front of this camera. One of the other cameras, not that camera, where something they kept on throwing stuff in or setting it off. So I assume they could shoot the IR and they were just setting it off all the time. So they were just messing with the cameras and everything. But they just happened to get lucky and take a picture of them. You know, and there was definitely one behind the camera moving it around when he did it. So, And in the past, like I said, I've had a lot of videos where something's moving, you see dirt coming out in the back. It doesn't mean any elk. We can't say everything is Sasquatch out there because I have pictures of bear attacking our cameras, elk, deer. We see coyotes. We see, you know, just about every bit of wildlife out there. So we see it. But the only ones that ever mess with the cameras is the elk, bear, and Sasquatches, that's what I always say. And nothing seems to, you know, we have human scent all over them, and it doesn't stop them. It doesn't stop any of the wildlife. So, I mean, you know, when people say, oh, you got to put, you know, wash them up or whatever, I don't do any of that stuff. So,
Ben, what is Bigfoot Ops' objective now going forward? I mean, you know they're there. You've collected some evidence of, I mean, I would imagine a lot of audio stuff. You've had some visual encounters. I know that in the past you guys have found footprints and impressions and stuff in the area.
Yeah,
what is your objective?
Well, most of the time I started this all in the beginning because I worked at a living facility and there's a lot of elderly people out there and disabled people out there, they can't get out and do this. So I basically get out and numb their eyes and whatever, and I share pictures and videos of our experiences and everything, give little presentations where they can, you know, live these moments, basically, because a lot of people don't get to get out and go to the summit or whatever like that. And when I work there, I get, you know, once a month or whatever, I give them a little presentation, but they were just so curious and everything. And now I try to do that, like at the good library here at Graham. I go give presentations there, and just for people can experience it, you know, for people can't get out there. Because they look at the internet and it isn't enough for them. So I'm start doing YouTube videos for them because we were talking about that, where we can get a little bit more in depth on what we show, what goes on when we're researching and everything, and go let them be part of it by going over the evidence with this or whatever that they think. And like I said, we're not trying to imply anything beyond the trying to prove thing now. So we're just like, so the document has it, and let them make their own opinions on things, because they don't always agree. The people on there, you can only show so much. So I don't even let me the judge on it. I just present the evidence. I said, this is what we found. You know, and what do you think? And I'm going to compel all the vocal, the recordings and all the documentation. We tried to document, at least I tried to interview these people where they can actually, you know, make their own determination or their own opinion, what they think is out there, what isn't out there, or whatever. So that's basically what I do anyway. Now, some of us, you know, some of my research partners are a little bit different in thinking. Some want to get, they want that siding. Chuck, I don't like to speak for him. I don't even want to say because we just research differently on certain things. But most of the time, all the other in a whole, we just collect evidence, and that's what's good about Chuck. But there's some people that just want to have the experience when we take them out there. So I just don't like speaking for somebody else with the goal. You'll have to ask. You know, you've done that before, so I'm pretty sure Chuck has already told you what his goal is or whatever. So.
Very cool. Well, I think that's cool that you are sharing that, you know, with folks that can't get out into the field and
still
asking for their...
At the same time, we're still doing documentation. To give it to who, I never know, you know, but we still save all the information. So one of these days when, you know, if and when it does happen, you know, and somebody has... you know, they've proved it, you know, I don't know if they're going to do that, but it's big for the community, but it's useful information. So, you know, if they say, for instance, if the state ever recognizes the state, which they won't, the species, if they were to do something like that, then they have some kind of, you know, documentation on what goes on. And isn't just mine, it's people like, we're close with Gerald Adams. He sends me stuff weekly. Very good stuff. I mean, talking about a spot on research, he's another one down there in your neck of the woods, Southern Oregon. He's got both relations, pictures. Overall, great guy. Likes to share his stuff, too. It's very interesting stuff. I mean, he gets a lot of vocalizations. I say, wow, that's really good. You know, he's got one vocalizing on his property there. I says, wow. You know, a lot of activity just like our site, and we just compare notes on everything. And I think I've actually done that with you and Larry Turner once. So we you know, we talk back and forth, you know, and I'm more than happy to share anything we got, you know, and you've been willing to give me some of your stuff too, you know, listen to this or give your input on something. And that's the whole idea, is just to work together, you know.
Let's say collaboration, not competition.
I don't tell you.
But I mean, it is that. It's interesting is how when we've talked with other groups that how much similarity there is. Like, oh, I've got vocals that sound just like that, you know, and it's and it doesn't match anything that is in the Macaulay Library of Sound. It's like this is something completely. Mm-hmm. Unique that and it is this artifact. These sounds do occur in different locations a lot, sometimes even within your area, definitely with associated Bigfoot activity, sightings and other corroborating evidence. It's just not a single sound. There's lots of sounds over lots of time with other things going on. You had a really weird experience one time that you had shared with me, and you know, people talk about being zapped, about where they are disorientated,
I just kept saying that I'm paranormal going. I don't know if infrasound is actually paranormal. Because you don't want to know about that whole incident. Yeah, that one's really prominent in my mind. For defense purposes, I always say for them. I was out there, this was also at Charlie, sitting out there, and I don't remember exactly the date this happened. You know, I'll never probably remember the date because I was so sick. I was actually, was up there researching, I was waiting for it to get dark, and I was going to set my equipment like I normally do just before it gets dark, and I was just taking a nap in my RV, because my research did get my RV, by the way. I was sitting out taking a nap, and my wife yells into me from the And this time was in the back. The back door was in the back of the vehicle. And she was out there. I guess she was smoking or messing around or something. And she comes running in there and she said, "Hey, Ben, there's something out there, something big or whatever." So I said, "Oh, okay." And I thought, well, maybe it's a bear, but I'm like, it's so light. You know, I'm half asleep or whatever. So I get up and she said, "Oh, I think it's huge." So she didn't see it. She could actually hear it. And I guess it was moving behind a stump, which we've had some kind of activity go on before around this area. So me, I grabbed my camera and everything, and I jump off the back, and I don't even think I even hit the ground before I was projectile vomiting. I mean, I wasn't sick. I've never been this sick in my life, and I didn't feel like I got hit by anything. I just instantly, well, by the time I hit the ground, maybe take a step, I was just upset stomach, and I was just continually projectile vomiting. I could not go any farther. I was kind of doubled over, and I just kept on, you know, and I turned around, just looked at her, and I'm still, you know, continuing to vomit, and I just kind of, like, looked over at that stump over and said, I'm not even going to go over there, so I actually crawled myself just about to get back into the RV, laid in the bed. I couldn't drive. I couldn't go anywhere, but I was doing this for, like, every 10, 20 minutes. I was continuing throughout the night for 12 hours. I was vomiting, and I wasn't sick. I hadn't even eaten anything. I haven't eaten any dinner yet. And so it wasn't for me. I always tell her, my wife is her, she tried to poison me or something. But no, it's never been anything like that. I've never had a flu like that. But that is the sickest I've ever been in my life. And I could not do anything. All I wanted to do is lay there and die. I called it. And I actually had this happen a week later down the road, and I was doing some recording audios, but it was not as bad. I did it for a perfectly, again, and like I said, the sheriff has actually had it on recording this time. I was actually got to recording some vocals out there across, it was actually across the road from us, and the road was only like 10 feet across, as the vocals come out there, and all of a sudden, I started doing it again. And I was just sitting there completely, you know, nothing wrong, nothing, whatever. And I was perfectly healthy, and all of a sudden I just started to went up and everything. I haven't had that happen since then, but I tell you what, if that's infrasound, I didn't hear anything, smell anything, get, feel like I got zapped by electricity, hair stood up on my hand or whatever. I was just sick. I mean, instantly. And you cannot do anything. But this, like I said, this only lasted like about 4 hours that night. I thought, oh, God. But I said, I was going to actually go. And I said, if they kept on doing this to me or whatever, what's going on out there, I said, I might have to give up researching now because there's no way the Earth are going to do this. So, and I've been in close proximity to them since then in a couple of areas, and I've never had it happen again. But, oh, my God, that's terrible. You hit by something like
that. Yeah, it was just a weird.
Percent. That's what you mean.
Yeah, well, and we don't know what it is. I think people refer to it as being zapped, you know, which doesn't mean anything. It's just a word that somebody plucked out of the air, but somebody had a weird experience and, you know,
and
name denoted it as
like
being zapped.
That,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
and that's
but it was an associate.
You know, like, it was supposed to be, and I assume that's what it was, moving in, there was a big bear there, they're making stuff down. Like I said, I didn't see the animals over there, but I didn't even want to deal with what was over there. I just took my ass into that thing and laid down. I said, there's nothing more I could do for the rest of that night. And I, like I said, I've never been sick like that in my life, so not even drinking heavily or whatever, if I'm not sick.
It won. I mean, whatever, it didn't want you coming out there if it was the cause. So that, I just thought that was a weird experience. So, is there anything else you...
I've been doing it for a few years, so I never had it happen.
Yeah. We're just about up against the clock here. So is there anything else you'd like to share with the Monster X audience before we call it a night?
No, just say this. Just like everybody's safe out there and everything when they do this. It's an interesting thing is researching or whatever. So it's like people that enjoy it. And so if anything, if people are not worried about what the Bigfoot community is doing or whatever, it's actually a great experience. I said, I love taking friends out there and everything. We go out there and we get to share the experiences and stuff. And sometimes very seldom, but, you know, we picked the right time or whatever. We had some kind of, you know, some kind of activity going on, but there's only been a couple times we don't have. And I actually took law enforcement out there. We've had them see them do firmwares and everything. For people that, I love that when they doubt that they're skeptical or whatever, they get to see it for themselves. But that doesn't happen a lot, so, but it's interesting, so.
Well, Ben, I want to thank you for joining me tonight and talking Bigfoot. It's always fun to catch up with you, and mm-hmm. I know you have been after me as well as Shane to come out and go squatching with him. We're going to make that happen here for too much longer.
You can get Scraggy Larry out there, too. Get that Larry Turner.
Yeah,
there.
Well,
Larry's – yeah. I know he's not doing well, so I love that guy, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he's had some surgery and he's recovering. But
mm-hmm.
All right.
Thanks,
well, Ben, thanks again for taking the time to sit down and talk with me.
Well,
join us next week
to you guys.
For
it's always fun.
Oh yeah. Join us next week for a new episode of Monster X Radio. Until then, everybody, keep it squatchy, be safe out there, as Ben says. Thanks a lot.
Yep.